more. We're joined by Master Tesfatsian from the Star Tribune. Master, I think that's your song because you liked it last time, right?
Of course, man. You know, I always love the Master T track. That's how you know it gets me. That makes it official.
Yes, it does. Man. It absolutely does. So, Master, where are you today? Have you changed your pick for the Vikings at number 11?
As far as it's just who they're going to pick at number 11 or what they're going to do.
Or you think they're even going to stay at number 11?
Well, I mean, I always thought they were going to have to look at the possibility of trading down. I mean, number 11 always, it looks appealing just because of the fifth-year option. And, you know, with a salary and the fifth-year option goes down after the 11th pick. But, I mean, you look at the last couple of years and you see, like, 11 or 15, it always seems to be that sweet spot where there's a guy like Earl Thomas in 2010, J.J. Watt in 2011, you know, a Sheldon Richardson, I believe, in 2013. Last year you had Aaron Donald and Odell Beckham Jr. pick at 12 and 13. So there's always someone that slips out of that top 10 for some reason, and it ends up just being a complete stud. And the only reason why I stick around at number 11 is if Amari Cooper's there or Vic Beasley's there. If those two guys are not there, I look to trade down and possibly snag one of these cornerbacks, which are ones available, or one of these offensive linemen in the late teens.
Well, for Vic, it's unlikely that he would slide much past number 8, right? Where if he's sitting there and Atlanta hasn't, you know, they would take him, but that would also say, like, the Bud Dupree was sure is going to be gone, right? If Dupree and Dante Fowler are gone.
Bud Dupree could go anywhere. I don't think there's a guy that's more, that people have kind of gone back and forth on more so than Bud Dupree. Some think he can go to the Falcons there. I mean, some think he'll go in high teams. Now, the thing with Beasley was, I mean, he should be a Sherlock top 10 pick, but you're seeing more and more people kind of projecting him a little outside of that. I mean, you had Mel Kiper and Todd McShay not even having the first round, which is ridiculous because this is one of the top 5 talents in the draft. If anything, I think he's a lot better than Dante Fowler anyways. I think he's the best edge rusher in this draft. So he should go in the top 10, but we know how the NFL draft goes.
Yeah.
There's a reason why those teams in the top 10 are in the bottom top 10, or in the bottom 10 anyways, because they just have a tough time evaluating talent.
All right, Master Tesfatsian gets the call tomorrow from Wilf. Ziggy Wilf calls you. You know what? I don't trust Spielman. I want you to make the pick. Who are you picking at 11?
I tell him you need to raise my salary first off.
That's right.
I tell him that. Second off, I tell him that if Beasley and Cooper aren't there, I trade back. If not, we can't trade back. I would tell him to snag one of the cornerbacks, either Marcus Peters and Trey Wayne. I think Peters is slightly better talent, but those top 5 cornerbacks, there's not much of a big difference between those guys in terms of the stability. There's not one that really just sticks out more so than the other. I know a lot of people are starting to hate on Trey Wayne as of late, but I think Trey would be a pretty solid pick as well. So, but I would lean towards Peters just because he's a little bit more bigger. And, you know, I think you've seen Zimmer and what he's capable of doing with big time cornerbacks that have some sort of struggles as far as characteristics go. So he's able to whip them up in shape. So I think either Peters or Wayne.
How far do you, let's say he does decide to trade out of 11, how far down can he go and get Wayne's? Because it seems like Wayne's, I mean, I'm looking at a mock draft now, the USA Today one, their latest one. They got Peters going 30th to Green Bay, which sounds, that's a long time for him to sit.
Yeah, and I think they can get him in the 20s, to be honest. I think they can trade back and see what they can get.
No.
And possibly, you know, snag him in the 20s if someone wants to climb up and get that number 11 pick, depending on who's there, you know. Possibly a Todd Gurley type of guy could be up there at number 11.
But Wayne's would not, I mean, he's not going to slide into the 20s, is he? If Trey Wayne's is still there?
Repeat that, because I think you repeated Wayne's and Peters.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, Wayne's would not slide into the 20s, would he? Wouldn't he have to be taken in the teens?
I mean, that's the thing with those cornerbacks, like I was saying, it's just that they're so bunched up together that it just depends on what you prefer. There's not one that sticks out physically or even on tape as far as having just a wow factor to them. So, I mean, there could be a possibility where Peters gets picked over Wayne's, or even, you know, a guy like Byron Jones from UConn. He's getting a lot of hype as of late, and a lot of people have liked him throughout the draft process. He could be the first cornerback pick. That's what makes this draft so interesting, because just that after number 1 pick with Jameis Winston, who I think, there's no question he should go to the Bucs. From number 2 on, I mean, it's just going to be so unpredictable on what exactly happens, and no one really has a good idea or a good understanding of who will pick what, because there's so much talent that's just bunched up together here in the first round.
Are you buying that the Browns actually are offering the 12 and the 19 to get up to number 2 to take Mariota?
Wouldn't it be the most Browns thing ever?
You're right. That's a good point. It would be a Browns thing to move. That's their type of play.
I mean, just drafting a quarterback last year and giving up on him in a year, just to draft another quarterback who, you know, is the second best quarterback in this draft. Who, I mean, outside of Wentz, I don't think there's another franchise quarterback in this draft, but I do think Mariota could be a good quarterback down the road. But they're going to have to give up more, if anything, than just a 12 and a 19. I don't think that'll be enough. They'll have to give up another pick or two as well, because we saw the hole that the Rams got from Washington to trade up for RG3 a few years back. So I don't think those two picks will necessarily be enough for the Titans to give up that number two pick.
We're talking to Master Sesfatian from the Star Tribune. Now, Master, because you've done a lot with the draft over the last few weeks, is there a unquestioned third quarterback, or are there a few guys that could be the third best?
There's a few guys that could be. I mean, I watched a lot of Brett Hundley, obviously the Pac-12 guy, and he should have been in the first round. He should have been a first-round quarterback, but he never developed. And you could see him under pressure and under duress. He struggles heavily. Granted, he didn't have a good offensive line there at UCLA, but he just panicked under pressure. And time and time again, a lot of teams would bring pressure on him because he didn't know exactly what to do when he wasn't a good decision maker under pressure. I would lean more towards Bryce Petty, but I mean, and you're seeing him get a lot of hype as of late. The quarterback from Alabama, I forget his name right now. I can't believe I'm blanking out on it. But he's another option I would think as well. But Bryce Petty, I would say, would be the number three guy right now.
Well, the reason I asked that question, if you're Tampa Bay, can you?
No, don't even start. No,
you know where I'm question. Going. Can you take Leonard Williams and then take the quarterback with the second round pick?
Finish that question. No.
You got to take Winston.
You got to take Winston. He is by far head and shoulders above every other quarterback in this draft. And the only reason why you would, maybe if you fell back a few draft spots, trade away that number one pick and pick Mariota. But even then, I wouldn't even do that. Off the field, Winston has his concerns, and there's no question about that. He needs to grow up. He needs to mature. As a 21-year-old quarterback, there's going to be a lot of pressure on his shoulders to be the franchise guy. But there is no way in any circumstance that the Bucs should pass up on Jameis Winston for that number one overall pick. He's too talented to pass up on, and he's too talented to, I mean, with the concerns that he has off the field, this is the most important position in the league. If there's one position where you're going to try and take a gamble at a guy with character concerns, it's going to be quarterback.
Garrett Grayson, by the way, is the guy you were thinking of, right? Was it Garrett Grayson? Was that
no,
the guy?
No.
Who are you thinking of?
I can't remember right now. I'm not even next to the laptop.
Well, he's a Colorado State quarterback, but somewhere he could be the third. Some people think he might be the third best in the draft.
He could be possibly. I haven't seen too much of Colorado State, which thankfully because, you know, the Vikings have a franchise quarterback, I haven't had to focus.
Yeah, they don't. You're right. They don't have to worry about it. All right, let me ask, let's phrase it this way. Forget what's happened since he got into the NFL. Coming out, Andrew Luck, RG3, Jameis Winston. Where does Winston fit in there? Is he would you put him ahead of RG3, or would he be third in that group?
I'd put him ahead of RG3, and I think Winston was a better he's a better prospect coming out of college than Teddy Bridgewater was. So I'd give Winston the slight nod over Bridgewater, and I was high on Bridgewater. But I mean, obviously Luck coming out of the draft. I was big on RG3 as well. I thought he was going to be a good quarterback. Obviously, I was wrong on that one, but. I mean, Luck head and shoulders would be number one in that situation. Winston, number two. I think a lot of people are making a bigger deal out of the interceptions that he had this year and not even talking about the decision making he had, his redshirt freshman year, when he did win the Heisman. So, I think Winston is going to be a really good quarterback in this coming out of this class, not only in class, but also in the NFL. He could possibly be a top 12, top 10 type of quarterback.
Do you think that the Vikings, now again, we'll take Spielman at what he said. I don't quite buy it, but that he, you know, that their intent is on keeping Adrian Peterson. Do you see them drafting a quarterback? And not, I'm not saying like with a seventh round pick, in the top say four rounds.
No, a quarterback.
Excuse me, running back.
Oh, running back.
Sorry.
Yeah, I could see that. Absolutely, I could. Just because it's a deep draft, and even if you do have Peterson, I mean, you're only going to have him for a year or two. You know, it's not like, you know, he's a 30-year-old running back as he is right now, and this is a deep running back class where you've got some other big backs like David Johnson of Northern Iowa that I really like, and Jay Ajayi from Boise State, two big backs. And you could take a David Cobb in the fourth round.
I really like Cobb.
Yeah, Cobb's another good back as well. I mean, there are options that you can take in every all 3 days of the NFL draft. And I think it would be wise to pick one anyway, because, you know, you don't, the last thing you want is just when training camp comes around and, you know, worst case scenario, Adrian Peterson says, you know what, I'm not going to play. And he doesn't play. And then you'd have a backup option where you have David Johnson and Jerick McKinnon, which is a really good 1-2 punch that you can have, or Jaji or Kyle.
Yeah, that's not too bad. And the guy we had, Cameron Botticelli from the U, defensive tackle. I mean, he was saying he anticipates being a free agent. Guys like that, I'm looking forward also to see who some of these free agents are that the Vikings bring in, the undrafted free agents, because there's still talent coming in those guys too. You've probably come across a few that you think will be free, you know, good ones that'll be free agents.
Yeah, and Spielman's big on those kind of guys, you know, just especially as we've seen through free agency and previous drafts as well, just taking shots at those seventh rounders or those undrafted free agents, and because it's low risk, you know, and high reward possibilities.
Yep.
You know, if you get a couple of these guys, more so than just drafting, you know, big name guys in the top half of the class, there's a better percentage that you're going to hit on some of those lower guys, like Shamar Stephen in the seventh round last year, which the coaches really do love him, because of his flexibility and nose and three tech, but someone that they could see, you know, being a potential starter down the road.
I'll tell you what, Master, you know your football, you know this team. We appreciate you taking the time with us, as always.
I appreciate it, man.
All right, Master Tesfatsi from the Star Tribune, thanks so much. We'll talk to you again. Thank you. We are going to take a quick break. When we return, talk to Pete Wagner and Al Newman, former twin Al Newman. They do On Deck Radio with you, right?
Yeah, I'm kind of there.
You're kind of there?
Yeah.
You got some other guy that's on there too, right? He used to play baseball.
Yeah, I think he was a part of a World Series.
Gene Somba. Didn't he have the winning hit in one of those World Series? Gene Markin? Is that his name? Gene Markin?
Yeah.
That's a pretty good crew you're with there. Al, Gene, and Pete. On Deck Radio, 11 to noon on Saturdays. But in a few minutes, Pete Wagner and Al Newman will join us, talk a little baseball. We'll be right back. We're back. And we are joined by Al Newman. Now, Pete Wagner will be with us shortly. Al Newman, of course, played 5 seasons with the Twins. Now, Al, you had a pretty good bookend to your career.
Yeah.
87 and 91.
Right, I brought it with me, and I took it with me when I left.
You know, I don't think you get enough credit for that.
Hey, you know, and here's the kicker. When I came back as a coach, we made the playoff run. We didn't get it done, but we did have a pretty good stretch of division wins. Was it 4 or 5 in a row? But those were good days for me.
They were terrific days. You've got a couple of rings there, which is none too shabby.
No, I tell you what, it just, you know, being able to play here and see how much the Twins love, the fans love the game. They love when the team plays well, of course. But I could never forget, and I never get tired of hearing people say congratulations on the two World Series.
It's great. You know, Al, actually, I'm going to give out our number here, 651-989-9105, 651-989-9105. We have a pair of tickets to tomorrow's game for the Twins, and we're going to actually, if you call in and you get the first one to get the right answer, we are going to give you those tickets, and it's going to be an Al Newman question.
Okay.
And you obviously will know the answer.
And I have a feeling what the question might be.
Well, you ask the question then. You come up with it. We'll make it ask the question and we'll make it a multiple choice.
Okay. How many? You want me to throw it out there now?
Go ahead. How many?
How many career home runs did I hit?
All right. Well, let's throw out some numbers. Was it 15?
13.
Or?
9.
Or what? Or
1.
1. So 15, 13, 9, or 1?
Yes.
All right, that's Pete on line 1 there, though, right? Pete, how are you?
Good. I don't have an answer on that one.
All right, well, we have somebody on the that will be with us in a second here. And
wow.
I know Pete knows the answer. Al knows the answer. Let's see if our caller can get the answer right. Let's go to line 2. Can you go to line 2? You can't go to line 2.
Not at the moment.
Why not? It's not on hold?
No.
It is now.
That's not on hold.
Looks like it is.
Quit trying to tell me how to do my job.
Oh, excuse me. All right. While we're waiting for it to get it on hold, we have joined by Pete Wagner. Pete and Al, along with Gene Larkin, do On Deck Radio Saturdays 11 to noon. And you know, it's, right now, the Twins have sort of taken a back seat to what the Wild are doing. But, I mean, it's going to be the focus will be on them soon enough. All right, you got a caller here? Oh, hold on a second.
We got John in Hastings.
John, how are you?
Good. How are you, Bob?
Good. You heard the question Al threw out there, right?
Yes, I did.
Do you know the answer?
The answer is one.
He does
you
know.
You are correct, sir. You are correct.
Do you know what year?
Huh?
Okay, here's a second. Now, you're going to get the tickets, but did he get that one as a Twin?
I'm going to say yes.
Well, would he be right or wrong, Al?
He's wrong on that half of it. I was with the Montreal Expos, and I hit it at the old Fulton County Stadium off Zane Smith. Little did I know it would be the only home run that I would hit in my career.
But you know what, though? When you look at your career numbers, I'll tell you what, you had some wheels. Because you had 91 career stolen bases.
That's before I developed this pot belly I'm carrying around now, but I did pride myself on being a speedster that could come in and steal a base late, or if I was starting the game, Tom Kelly had no problem giving me the green light.
Well, I'll tell you what, your 1989 was your MVP season.
Yes, sir, most definitely.
At 38 ribbies, 25 stolen bases, batted .253, 25 stolen bases, that's pretty darn good.
Well, I tell you, that was the year that Gaetti got hurt. And I got an opportunity to play full-time or to be a starter for about 35, 40 games. And I think during that period, I hit .300 and played pretty well. But I can tell you this, I was ready for him to come back when he did because I was tired.
Yeah, I tell you what, Al, you bat .253 with a .341 on-base percentage. You had some balls, and how many? Do you have any? Were you hit very often? Did you take many shots to the arm or to the leg?
No, I was one of those guys that screamed before the ball hit me, so I never got hit. I was quick to yell before it hit me, so I was really good at getting out of the way.
Well, that year you had two, six total. Now let me ask Pete this. Pete, right now, if he went on the field, how many stolen bases do you think he'd have this year if Al could play again? Could he hit 25? How many would he have now?
With today's body or yesterday's body?
No, yeah. Actually, both. Well, that's today's body and yesterday's body. Al would still be able, I mean, the type of game he had, he could certainly step in and play now with, you know, in his youth.
Absolutely.
With that same body.
Absolutely.
You guys are too kind, but I appreciate it. Thank you.
Hey, Al, mine isn't, I'm bringing the same deal, so it's all good. I mean, it's all self-deprecation. I got a question on that home run at Fulton County. Were the locusts, did you have to hit through all those bugs to get it to the outfield there?
No, you know what? At that time, it was just blazing saddles. It was so hot. And, you know, it's also a big-time game. Bob Horner was the third baseman for them. We beat them 13-4. That was the day that he hit four home runs.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he hit three off the starter, and then he hit the last one off of Jeff Reardon, who was just getting some work in. So we won 13-4. I hit my home run, and nobody really paid
so
much attention.
You were overshadowed.
Oh, most definitely.
Now, Al, I got to ask you. We're talking to Al Newman and Pete Wagner. When you had the home run, did you say, okay, the gates are open, here I come?
Well, you know what? I hit it like my first 20-something major league at-bat. Never knowing that it would be my last one. I wasn't much of a home run hitter in the minor league, but like I said earlier, I thought I would hit it more than one, that's for sure. And now they took that plexiglass down at the Metrodome, you know, of course, after I was done playing.
Now, how close did you get? Did you have any triples that you thought you might be able to turn into an inside the park? You didn't have that many triples in your career.
Well, you know what? I told Ron Gardenhire when he was a third base coach that there was no chance in heck I was going for an inside the park to break my home run streak. I wanted one over the fence. But I guess if the game was on the line, I would have went for it.
And gone for it. That's pretty good. Now, how do you, both of you guys, you obviously follow the Twins. And from last week to this week, how are you feeling about them?
Go ahead, Pete.
Well, I'll tell you what. Overall, overview, they come into this one 9-11, had an opportunity to not only pick themselves up another win and also in another series, which would have been their fourth and their third here at Target Field. But if I were to say today, there have been moments of just brilliance, and then there have been moments of what's going on. And this is like a mass unit. Now the third player is leaving. Two pitchers have left today. Hughes left with the right hip flexor. And now working his way out, Casey Fien, he's working his second inning where something happened here. And then Jordan Schaefer has a mild MCL strain to his knee as he slipped on the outfield grass trying to extend himself over to second on an overthrow from a bunt that he had. So, I mean, this has been crazy, this game. But right now it's 10-7 Detroit. But overall, the starting pitching has been much, much better. And you know, I'm telling you, we brought it up yesterday. I say if this team can be hovering in and around 500 when Urban Santana gets back, I'm not saying playoffs. That's going to be next to impossible with this division. However, and with the wild card most likely coming out of this division as well, I think this team is, I would say, on track to being a team that needs steps they need to take.
You know, Pete, and I concur with you on that. Unfortunately, they have had some injuries here today. And, you know, you got Nolasco, who's on the mend, who's on his way back. I think he's throwing a simulated game tomorrow with Duncan. But, you know, I'm like you. From the beginning, I thought it was a 500 team. I think the rotation has been pretty good here this last, you know, coming off the road trip and then the first couple starts here. Really like what Telfrey has done. He's done what we wanted him to do last year. The year before, but he's come off the injury and he's been a stalwart out there on the mound, with his seven inning appearances. And I tell you what, he's been, I'm not going to say effectively wild, but he's not afraid to go up and in and down and away. And I think a guy like Gibson, a young starter, would learn from him. Him and Mays will learn how to do that and get better.
Now let me switch away from them a second and ask you this, Al. We were talking about you and your career. Who most closely resembles you on this year's Twins team, the game you had?
Well, I would say, you know, he's a much better hitter than I thought I could be. But I think Santana, I wish he would take a few more pitches and try to draw walks because he could utilize his speed so much better. You know, every 3-1 pitch he shouldn't swing at, he should take it and try to get ball four because he's going to get the same pitch 3-2. But I would say it would be Santana.
You're right. If he does need to get more walks. The stats on him walking is just, last year when we talked, when we talked last week, he had not yet, he was batting 200 with a 200 on base percentage. And it's not much better now.
No, it's not. That can't work in that number one hole. But, you know, he's a pretty good player. He's a young player. And let's just hope that, you know, I'd like to see him hit eighth or ninth. You know, because last year, okay, yes, he had a nice batting average and put some decent numbers up. But if you look inside the numbers, what we're talking about right now was readily available then. He didn't draw walks. He didn't really have a high on-base percentage. But his batting average is what kept him going last year. So let's hope that he settles in at about the 250 mark and maybe draw a few more walks and get that on-base percentage up about 350.
Well, he's at 271 because he got hit by a pitch, you know, in the last week. So he's at least got the on-base percentage up. Still not a walk. That is incredible to me.
Yeah, that is amazing for a guy that is not a legitimate power hitter. You know, and I hate to say back in the day, but, you know, guys that were about our size were expected to draw base on balls. We really weren't expected to swing 2-0 unless it was an RBI situation.
Yep.
But the game has changed a little bit. I'm not going to say for the better, but it has changed to the point that guys don't think like that very much anymore.
Yeah, it's a shame. Now, Pete Wagner and Al Newman will be joined by Gene Larkin on Saturday, 11 to noon, On Deck Radio, right here on 105 The Ticket. Pete and Al, thanks so much for taking the time with us. We really, it's always appreciated.
No problem. Go Twins.
All right, it's fun talking to you guys. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Thank you. And when we get back, we'll talk to Jim Suhan from the Star Tribune, suhanunfiltered.com, and Jim's segment sponsored by Premier Pool and Spa. We'll be right back. We are joined by Jim Suhan from the Star Tribune, Suhan on Filter.com. Jim's segment sponsored by Premier Pool and Spa, which features the Arctic Spa built in Canada. The Arctic Spa can handle Minnesota winters and be just great with any other season. Premier Pool and Spa, they take fun seriously. Now, Jim, I don't know. I don't think I asked you. Are you leaving tomorrow? Will you be at the NFL draft in Chicago?
I am going to Chicago tomorrow. I'm not going to the NFL draft. I'm basically not covering it, so it wouldn't do me much. But Chip's going to cover. Chip's going to write the Star Tribune column on it from Winter Park. I'm just going to Chicago to drink.
Probably a wise decision. Now, there's never a bad night to drink in Chicago either.
I can't even think of anything clever to say about that. It is one of the great drinking towns in America. I'm not a big drinker, but I will enjoy it. It's a great city. It's one of the great. It might be the greatest hangout city in America in terms of having a huge city with great options everywhere, all kinds of different neighborhoods, neighborhood bars, great sports town, great drinking town, great music town. It's awesome. I love going to Chicago, and frankly, this is even better than the usual trip to Chicago because I'm going to have a Thursday night off there.
Now, are bars open until 4 there or 3? They're open late.
Last time I was there, I think they kicked me out at 4:45, so let's go with 4:45.
That's what it is. Now, how about, I know you've been following, we've talked about it too, Master Tesfatsian was on with us earlier, giving us his thoughts on who the Vikings may wind up taking, and I thought that it might be, that he might be with Trey Waynes, but he thinks they may wind up trading the pick and moving down, because he thinks Waynes would be there, or Peter, I mean, he thinks he could be a cornerback, he was thrown out a number of positions, and he'd love to get Vic Beasley. You don't do a mock draft, but is there someone that you're feeling they're going to wind up taking?
It's hard to answer with a specific name because here's my view. And I think Master and I did on the podcast last night, which just broke it down to the nth degree, mostly him breaking it down, me nodding a lot because I think he's done a lot of his homework.
Yeah, he has.
I want one of two things to happen. I think Spielman is in agreement with me. I either want them to get lucky, have a great player slide down the board much farther than expected, and have them have another Adrian Peterson, Percy Harvin, Randy Moss kind of draft where an incredibly talented guy they never thought would be there just falls to them. So I either want them to take a guy who they don't expect to be there, or I want them to trade down. I do not want them to use I don't mind them getting Trey Waynes. To me, he's not the 11th pick in the draft. If it's Trey Waynes and two other cornerbacks still there at 11, then I would want them to trade down, maybe trade down multiple times, get, either get Waynes later or get a similar cornerback later, get more picks. I just don't like 11, frankly. I wouldn't mind seeing them trade up and get a real stud. I wouldn't mind seeing them trade down and get extra picks. Sitting at 11, if the draft goes as is expected, I don't like them sitting there.
Well, now what about, because it's very possible and likely, Randy Gregory and Shane Ray will slide and be there at 11. Would you take a chance on either one? Although Ray, apparently he's got a toe injury that could keep him out for the first 4 to 6 weeks of the season.
Yeah, Ray, as I told you yesterday, I'm not really concerned with the marijuana thing. I've just known too many athletes who smoke marijuana that think much of that, and good athletes. The toe thing does worry me, and the fact that he's going to be out that long with it, and so you're, any of these guys could end up getting hurt between now and the start of the season. You're going to get hurt in the first snap of the regular season. But I don't know if you want to start your NFL career that way where you don't even know if he's going to be in healthy or in shape for his first NFL season. That's just a little dicey for me. There are just too many different kinds. I don't know if there's a big red flag, but there are too many different kinds of flags waving there for me to really be interested. But if he, if one of the premier pass rushers slides to Zimmer, and all of a sudden he can bookend Barr and another great pass rusher with, some decent interior pass rushers on this team, that would be hard to pass up. I mean, Zimmer with bookend pass rushers could be really dangerous.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that at all. And, maybe Shane Ray was smoking the marijuana because it helped with the pain from the toe.
I hear marijuana is good for that.
Well, I think it is. It helps relieve the pain. It could very possibly be. Now I got to go back.
Work for me.
I got to go back to the top of the draft. I if I'm running a team and he could turn out to be a Hall of Famer, I would be scared to death to take Jameis Winston. Are you okay with it?
Say it again?
Are you okay? I would be scared because I would just don't trust him. I don't think he's going to... I think it's going to be a very difficult situation that he... It's hard for these guys just to turn on a dime and completely change the way they behaved in college.
That's true. The problem with evaluating Winston's off-the-field stuff is there are so many mixed messages. I mean, you know, at first it looked like he had sexually assaulted someone, and maybe he did, but I'm not sure it's an open and shut case. He yelled the stupid thing in public, which is stupid.
Yes.
But, you know, I would. But if you think he's going to be a great player, do you let one stupid utterance like that change how you view him as a draftee? The crab legs at Publix, you know, I mean, God, probably every premier athlete in America in college has some kind of a handshake deal where they get some free food or something like that, and that sounds like what was happening. There are a lot of flags. I'm not sure there's a flag big enough to prevent me from taking him if I really believe that he's going to be a great NFL quarterback. My bigger concern is that he threw a lot of interceptions that were unforced last year. That worries me. He's surrounded by great talent. He's playing mostly against inferior defenses in an inferior league, and he threw a ton of interceptions in his last year in college. That kind of worries me more than any of the off-field stuff.
And it should, you're right, because if they're on force and he's just flinging them there. Well, Jim, now, what do you? What's the next up for you for Suhan on Filter.com? You're going to be able to do it when you're on the road, or you have one tonight?
Tonight. Last night was Master Kasfasian, yep, breaking down the draft. Tonight is 5 o'clock at the Lippy over by the XL Energy Center with Michael Russo, and then Russo and I will try to do one from the road in Chicago also.
He must be fun to travel with.
He's a great guy. He's a great guy. He's a lot of fun. He has a lot of energy. He knows people everywhere. I mean, you know, he knows rock and roll bands. He knows athletes from other sports. He's one of those people everybody likes, you know, unlike me.
Well, very much so. That's why you guys will be the life of the party in Chicago, shutting them down at 4:45.
We are the odd couple. There's no doubt about it.
All right, Jim, we'll talk to you tomorrow. Thank you.
Thanks, Bob.
All right, Jim Suhan from the Star Tribune and SuhanUnfiltered.com. Jim's segment sponsored by Premier Pool and Spa, which features the Arctic Spa. Built in Canada, the Arctic Spa can handle Minnesota winters. Premier Pool and Spa, they take fun seriously. We're going to come back, and we're going to talk to John Tower. He's a basketball coach at St. Thomas. Also, we talk to him a lot now this time of the year because he's also a psychology professor. Get inside the heads of some of these guys. We'll do that when we get back. We are joined by John Tower, coach at St. Thomas University, basketball coach, also a psychology professor there. John, how are you?
Doing great, Bob. How are you?
Good. Hellboy here was just telling me that Viking fans are among the worst, or if not the worst, that's using correct grammar, spelling, and punctuation. It was the Wall Street Journal used an automated proofreading service to check for writing errors, and they sampled comments on each NFL website from the fans. Viking fans averaged 11.4 mistakes per 100 words, good for seventh worst out of 32 teams. I think that's hilarious. Now the Packers were one of the best, right?
Yeah, they were second.
Second?
With about 5 to 5.5 errors per 100 words, and
okay,
the Lions fans were number one.
Okay, how do you screw up Go Packers?
I don't know.
Because that's probably all they typed or put in there.
How many championships do you have?
Yeah, probably, that's what they
that
do. Yep, exactly right.
Times.
How many championships do you have? Hey, John, I wanted to ask you about this and your role as a psychology professor. We've talked about Randy Gregory at the draft. He tested positive for marijuana. Shane Ray, another guy who could have been a top 5 or 10 pick, he tested, not tested, he was caught with marijuana a few days ago. Do you think these are self-destructive personalities, or do they have a feeling of invincibility when you're an athlete expected to be a high pick? I can't believe either one of these guys would be so stupid, but maybe it's deeper than that. And in your role as a psychology professor, what do you see it being?
Well, that's an interesting question, because I think obviously everybody's different. But the question that raises, I mean, number one, I think ESPN magazine did a kind of expose on marijuana use on college campuses and among college athletes a couple of years ago, and the rates were alarmingly high. So I think the first thing you have to say is probably this wasn't the first time these guys were using. Okay, now why wouldn't they stop when they know they're going to be tested? Well, it begs the question, were they able to pass other tests in the past, at least with the one young man where he did think he was able to get away with it. My hunch is this is a great example, no different than somebody who says, I ought to exercise every day and I don't. Yeah, I ought to stop smoking, but I didn't. And so that's without knowing many of the details of their cases. But I think that's probably a big part of it, is they thought, I won't get caught because I haven't in the past.
And see, I mean, to me, there certainly are many other options there could be, but the ones that, as I mentioned, I'm invincible. So many of these athletes, the professional athletes I've dealt with, they do have that sense of invincibility. Maybe you need it to perform, especially football players, at that level, to feel like you can't be hurt or touched by anyone.
Well, that's a great point, because I think when you do look at somebody's wiring, there's a reason why people get into risky sports. You look at bungee jumping, you look at skydiving, you look at playing strong safety in the NFL. There's certain people who are attracted to those kind of endeavors. Then you look at the physical tools you need. There's only certain people who could actually play strong safety in the NFL. And then you talk about, okay, but what goes along with that? Because that's not a light switch that you turn on and off. That's who you are. You know, Michael Jordan's Hall of Fame speech, different type of topic. But all he did was talk about competition and who he beat over the course of his career. Most people thought it was not the classiest of induction speeches, but it also was probably very reflective of exactly who he was and what epitomized him.
You know, and that's the mentality. I have no problem with that, because you're right. That's what he was. And that type of what he talked about is what probably drove him to be as good a player that he was.
For sure. And so when you talk, Bob, about the pro athletes that you've known, many of them who seem invincible, well, part of that might be the way they're wired, and probably part of it is the way they've been socialized. That if day after day, month after month, year after year, they're able to behave that way, it doesn't justify it, but why would we expect that they'd change?
Well, I agree with that. And now we have the Wild playing Friday night, coming off of back-to-back wins to close out the series. That should be emotionally and mentally, they should be on quite a ride right now, wouldn't you say?
Well, I think certainly you would think so. The hard thing about the playoffs is you're always playing a team that's also on a winning streak. It might only be a one-game winning streak, but, you know, Chicago they just won a huge game over Nashville that I think was 4-3, and they won in the third period. So, the Wild have momentum, but at the same time, team you play, you know, the NCAA, the one-and-done is probably a better example of that. In the Final Four, everybody talks about, well, this team's hot, they've won four straight games. Well, every team in the Final Four has won four straight games. So at the end of the day, I think it's professional teams. It's 0-0, and I'm sure the Blackhawks are feeling very good about their chances, too. It should be a fun series.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Talking to John Tower, the coach of the men's basketball team in St. Thomas and the psychology professor there. Now, John, you've got when do your camps start? Because we're coming into, in the next month or so or less, camp seasons, right?
Yeah, we start up June 8th, so we have 9 weeks during the summer, pretty much one-week camps. One of them is an overnight camp. Most of them are day camps, and the majority are at the University of St. Thomas. 21st summer, we've done it, and it's been just wonderful. So, yeah, all the kids out there who are looking for something to do in the summer, we'd love to have them come over to St. Thomas and play.
What's the age? Do you have a minimum age and a maximum age?
You know, we have some beginner camps for kids as young as kindergarten.
Oh.
And most of them are for kids going into 4th through 9th grade. So the vast majority are for, 8 to 14-year-olds. But we do have a few for the younger kids.
Now, have you had kids that went through your camp play for you?
Oh, yeah. My assistant, Mike Keating, who's, this dates me a little bit, but back in 1995, I was a college senior starting the camp, and with my college roommate, Mike Bergen, and Mike was one of the 25 kids in that first camp, and he ended up playing for us at St. Thomas. Isaac Rosenfeld, who was an All-American here, Tommy Hannon, John Nance, some of our best players over the last decade were kids that we saw growing up in 5th, 6th, 7th grade.
So well, they had good coaching. I didn't realize you started this when you still were in college.
Yeah, I was 22, didn't have any clue what I was going to do with my life, and my roommate and I thought this would be kind of fun to do. I'd run camps for the Timberwolves before, so we started out and had 25 kids the first year, and now we have well over 1,000 kids every summer. So it's been a lot of fun.
Now, and that's also a good core group for you, because you have a book coming out in June also, right?
It is, actually. All the campers this summer get a copy of the book. It's something that, I have two sons who you've met, Bob.
Yep.
Jack is 12.
Great kids, yep.
And great kids. I'm glad you think that.
Well, I was exposed to them for a short period of time. No, there are great kids.
They are wonderful little guys. But they, you know, the youth sports culture is one that I think has become fascinating because it really is. There's almost no way your kid can be a young athlete without getting in sort of the mix of traveling teams, AAU teams, organized sports. And so I've written a book. It's called WASP, W-O-S-P, Well-Intentioned, Over-Involved Sports Parents. And the basic notion is, you know, why less is more for WASPs, that as parents we're trying to do the best for our kids, but so often we're overprotecting them, we're overscheduling them, we're doing so much, and we're not letting them kids be kids, kind of the intrinsic motivation part of it that is really what I've studied for the last 20 years as a psychologist.
It needs to be. John Tower, we'll talk to you next week. Coach at St. Thomas men's basketball team and psychology professor. I'm sure we'll have plenty to talk about the Wild when they're immersed, and maybe talk some, see what the Vikings took too. John, thanks so much. Have a great weekend.
Sounds great.
Week coming up. All right. We're gonna take the time off here. Cameron Botticelli, call him Carmine. Thank you to him, Chuck Foreman, Brian Jones, Mason Tesfatsian, Pete Wagner, Al Newman, Jim Suhan, John Tower for joining us. Coming up next, superstar Mike Morrison, Ben Holson. You don't want to leave because they're going to have their NFL mock draft. I am the new general manager of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I'm making my first pick, and I may throw everything in an uproar with my pick. Well, they'll be right back, and they're going to give you a nice mock draft. Don't go anywhere. Don't touch that dial. We'll talk to you tomorrow.